Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
Not that long ago, didn't it seem like every news outlet in the world was writing opinion pieces and travel guides and 10 reasons to love type articles about Portland? It was just a cute little cartoon city. And on one hand, like, I get it. Stand at Council Crest or Mount Tabor or on the waterfront and tell me that you don't get it. It's objectively beautiful here. Many of those same rubberneckers who gleefully listed 101 reasons to drop everything and move to Portland are back in Rose City to reassess and tell us how they see our current era. And it's not cute and cartoony. Today, my guest is Nigel Jaquess, a major contributor to this week's cover package, Greetings from Portland. And he's going to explain why all this rubbernecking is maybe a good thing for us. It's Saturday, July 15th, and this is episode 132 of The Dive. What do people who examine cities in crisis see when they look at us? What do people who've been forced out see when they look back at us? What are the haters seeing that is getting them so worked up? Nigel Jaquess knows. Nigel will join me in one sec to break down why other news markets cannot seem to keep Portland's name out their mouths or off their headlines. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Mere hours before its reversal, Lucas Manfield asked city officials their opinions on a proposal that would have health officials distributing tinfoil and straws to fentanyl users as a harm reduction tactic. The bottom line seemed to be miscommunication. Anthony Effinger and Lucas Manfield report that American Medical Response, the company that kind of inefficiently dispatches ambulances in Multnomah County, is also carrying $5.4 billion in debt. And it gets worse. In a small world twist, Oregon's Public Employees Retirement Fund is an investor in Global Medical Response, the company that owns AMR. In April, S&P Global Ratings cut its rating on Global Medical Response's loans and bonds to CCC+. I don't speak Wall Street, but apparently that means that they are junk. And from the web, Bennett Campbell Ferguson reports that the much-hyped Dragathon at Darcel Showplace is officially the world's longest drag show. More than 60 drag artists performed for 48 hours, raising $285,000 for the Trevor Project. Now let's chat with Nigel Jaquess about this week's cover package, Greetings from Portland.
So the story this week looks at a real cross-section of national coverage over the past year, and some of that coverage is Fox News or its ideological brethren, places like the New York Post. There's no question that media writers or observers on the right have been gleeful in their coverage of Portland's problems. And look, we were arrogant. We probably needed to be taken down a peg or two. So some of that is definitely schadenfreude. But there's been a lot of more sober, more balanced coverage from, you know, we quote Governing Magazine, a piece from Governing Magazine. There's the Wall Street Journal. And people, I hope, understand that the Wall Street Journal's news section is very different from the editorial page, which is very right-leaning. The news section is straight down the middle. you know, there's coverage from the New York Times, other Los Angeles Times, other publications that have no particular ideological axe to grind, who have come to really try and understand what changed and how could it get better. And so I think there's real value. You know, we at Willamette Week and our colleagues, peers in the media locally at the Oregonian, Business Journal, Tribune, OPB, we've all been trying to look at the city and understand how could it be better. And I think we all have our nose pressed against the glass. We're all here every day. So it's helpful to have people come in from other cities, especially those who come and spend enough time to, you know, to talk to smart people and to really understand what's going on. So what we're trying to do this week is get an outsider's perspective on what is indisputably a very difficult time for this city. Portland is struggling mightily with a lot of things, and you're right, a lot of other cities are struggling with them as well. But I think perhaps part of the difference is that, and of course every city thinks they're the prettiest, best city, but there was a time in the not too distant past when a lot of people would have said, yeah, Portland's got things figured out better than other cities. And I don't think anybody thinks that today.
Yeah. How did the team choose which stories were going to be included in this package?
Well, you know, there's a wealth of possibilities. When we talked about doing this, everybody kind of went off to their computer, and we've all read the stories as they've come through, and we could have done, I think we did 9 or 10, we could have done 3 times that many. What we looked for was trying to find a balance of perspectives ideologically, or, you know, we included Governing Magazine, we included the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, we included, you know, most of the major dailies, but also Fox, and because, you know, everybody's perspective is different, and everybody has, I think, something interesting to say, and I found it actually very useful to read all the pieces. And, you know, we tried to eliminate duplication because some of them are similar. But there are some real themes that emerge, and there's some very perceptive and valuable reporting in these pieces.
Is there you said that we've got pieces from a number of different outlets. Is there a through line? I mean, aside from everything went wrong in Portland, is there something that carries through all of these pieces?
Let me illustrate a couple of the through lines, and maybe they're related. The Canadian Broadcasting piece I thought was really, really interesting. The context for that piece was that Vancouver, BC, has considered, you know, they've been very aggressive in harm reduction, and they've had open, I forget the exact term, they've had sites where people can go and openly use hard drugs, heroin, meth, what have you, as a harm reduction measure. And they want to come down and take a look at how 110 is work, how measure 110 is working, how is decriminalization working on the streets. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of that ballot measure. Justifiably, it was incredibly badly implemented in that we decriminalized before we put treatment dollars to work, and that was everybody would admit, even the greatest proponents of the measure would admit that was just a terrible mistake. But the CBC noted that Oregon still rates 50th in the U.S. for access to treatment. So wow. In essence, that's the real story. The real story is not that we decriminalized drugs, because people were using drugs anyway, and they're still using drugs in the other 49 states where they're illegal. But the real story is that we, instead of addressing an obvious, quantifiable disgrace that we're 50th in the nation in access to substance abuse, substance use treatment disorder facilities treatment, we picked this shiny object, Measure 110, and said, gee, look at us, we're innovative, we're experimenting, we're ending the war on drugs. Well, okay, that all sounds great, but what are you actually doing to treat people who need treatment, who want treatment? So that was I think that's a theme that a lot of people came at in different ways, which is stop telling us how good you are and stop, you know, kind of resting on the laurels of land use planning or transportation policy, and look at the nuts and bolts, the real kind of basics of providing services that people need. So that was one thing. Another, there's a Wall Street Journal article, which was fantastic. It quoted Thomas Lauderdale, the Pink Martini band leader, who's one of the, he's an icon in the city. And he said, I can't really recommend Portland now. He's so invested in the city. He owns a beautiful home downtown, right downtown. He's been an ambassador for Portland for years. So for him to say that is a real wake-up call. But the value of the piece to me was that they, instead of sort of dwelling on all the problems on the streets, they opened it with an artist who had lived here but been forced to move to Fort Wayne, Indiana, because he couldn't afford to live here. And he said, look, I'd still live in Portland if I could afford it. I'd much rather, all the problems Portland has, I'd much rather be in Portland, but I just can't afford it. And so the Wall Street Journal piece really, it was an extremely good piece of journalism that kind of pegged itself to the decline in population over the past 3 years. And, we've had one of the largest declines in population among the largest 50 cities in the country. And I think the doomsayers say it's because, there's open air fentanyl dealing on the streets, or 100 people got murdered last year. And the journalist piece, I think, made a pretty compelling case that a big part of the reason that people are leaving here is it's too expensive to live. And so I think that was a second through line, which is that, as you've said, a lot of cities are having problems. So what's different about Portland? Well, one of the things that's different is that it is a very unaffordable city. There are other cities that are more expensive, San Francisco, San Diego, New York. People make a lot more money in those cities. So in Portland, we have combined a relatively low per capita income with very high rents and very high home prices. So I think, again, the value of this piece is that some of these outside observers could come in and say, well, okay, look, there's fentanyl in Boston, there's fentanyl in Kansas City. What's different here? What's different here is it's really expensive to live. And so I think those were two of the through lines. Our failure to provide basic services. The guy from Governing Magazine, I don't know him, but he said, look, I've been coming to Portland for 20 years. It's a wonderful place. The problem that I see right now is you have local governments, city and the county and the state, that are not working well together. They're at odds with each other. They're not coordinating. There's plenty of money. There's a lot of money. When we look at the provision of public services, whether it's public safety or healthcare or mental health services, usually the problem is not enough money. That's not the problem here. And the Governing Magazine piece really pointed that out, that the human failure of elected officials who have been elected to provide these public services aren't doing their jobs. So those to me are the three big themes. And I mean, that sort of goes with the we're 50th in out of 50 in providing services that. And so I come away from this package optimistic, because the diagnosis, sometimes your diagnosis is you've got pancreatic cancer and you're going to die in 6 weeks. In this case, the diagnosis is you need to build more housing. We can do that. You need government officials to take the money that taxpayers have given them in abundance and use it more effectively. We can do that. I won't say we will do that, but I'm saying it's achievable. It's possible. Both of the big challenges that the national journalism fraternity or sorority have pointed out to us are solvable problems. And so I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. My husband has, all his family is out on the East Coast. So whenever they're doing check-ins, it's always, are you at war with the right side? Or, they're always violence in the streets and, all of this kind of stuff. In all of the pieces that you went through, who got it the most egregiously wrong?
I would say Fox. I think Fox, we have noticed over time that they will recycle the same. They'll take the worst video they can find, tent on fire or somebody in an absolute crisis, no clothes on, defecating on the sidewalk or on themselves. And they'll recycle it, and they will want to paint the whole city with that brush. And you know, I think the piece that we cited is one that they did about a woman who was living in a tent, and she said it's a piece of cake to be homeless in this city, and that you know, you just party all day and sleep in a tent that the city gave you, and you know, I it's just irresponsible. I my commute to work on my bike takes me through Old Town every day, and I'm often there in the early morning and toward the evening, and I see just the abject humanitarian crisis on the streets of people, you know, sleeping among their own garbage and human waste, and it's hot and it's uncomfortable, and there's no bathroom and there's no shower and there's nothing to eat, and you know, the idea that people are doing that voluntarily is just ridiculous, and the idea that that is all of Portland is ridiculous, because if you don't, you know, if you don't go through Old Town, or if you're not along the 205 bike path, most of the city remains extremely pleasant and livable. I'm not denying there are problems. There are huge problems, and we need to address them. But I think that Fox and, you know, the New York Post and the Daily Mail, the UK tabloid, consistently present a distorted picture of Portland.
Was there any news outlet that got it right?
For me, the piece that I thought was the most telling was the Wall Street Journal piece. There's an extraordinary piece of reporting. They managed to find an actress who rose to fame playing a character called Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Cassandra Peterson!
Yeah, and so she moved to Portland from L.A., and I'm paraphrasing her, but she told the Journal that, you know, people who think it's bad in Portland are crazy. You know, she's like, I wouldn't go back to LA for all the money in the world, and it's a wonderful place to live. And so I thought that presented a real, first of all, it presented a real balance. It also presented a, you know, a context, which is so important. And you've pointed out in your questioning earlier, you know, that The cities on the West Coast in particular, but cities all over the country, are experiencing unusually high levels of homelessness, unusually high levels, record highs of drug overdose, and so things are bad. You know, it's a bad time in this country, and I think, I don't know how on earth they figured out that Elvira had moved here. Kudos to them. But that piece really did present it. It didn't hide the problem. Losing population is, you know, we may all say, well, that's good. It's the city's a little too crowded, and the hiking trails a little too crowded, and maybe that'll help rent hikes ease a little bit. And those are all, you know, good possibilities. But ultimately, unfortunately, cities depend on growth. We need growth to supply the workforce. We need growth to keep our tax base robust. And so when cities shrink, that's a problem, as we see in Buffalo, Baltimore, Detroit, Cleveland, cities that have had kind of gone into long-term decline, and the population declines are really serious problems in all those cities. So I thought the Wall Street Journal was very clear-eyed about the problem, and very incisive in sort of diagnosing it, which is the high cost of housing, and getting, you know, a good piece of journalism gets a bunch of different voices. So you've got a lot of people being very candid, as I said, Thomas Lauderdale, Elvira, and it wasn't just about being celebrities, because the guy they quoted is an artist who's not a well-known person, who, you know, had to move to Fort Wayne. I grew up in Indiana. It would be hard for me to move back to Indiana, having experienced the Pacific Northwest wonderland. And he was pretty candid about it. I mean, he'd rather be in Portland, but he can't afford to be there. So,
what was left out of the piece?
Well, I left out. So this had a particular focus, which was, you know, how do other people see us? I think that wasn't left out because it wasn't. It was kind of left out by design, but I think a piece that I would like to see us do is another contextual rendering of the city, and that would be to go around to people who are, you know, pick decades, 50 years old, 60 years old, 70 years old, who have lived here their whole lives, who are either historians or professors or police or nurses or teachers who've kind of had context about the city in different realms. You know, tell us what it's like, because there are some people who think that, you know, Portland 20 years ago was Nirvana, and or 10 years ago was Nirvana, and all the ills that we see today are sort of brand new and created by the pandemic and created by the post-George Floyd kind of unease with each other. So I think sometimes historical context is lacking. People think we've never had problems like this before, or things were always great and now they're terrible. So I guess that you want to, I think, understand your city from a whole variety of directions. And this was a great piece because it tried to look at it from the outside, Portland from the outside. I'd like to look at Portland in another kind of context. And, you know, we've tried in the past to look at it from another context, which is how do we compare to, we did a piece last year that compared Portland to peer cities. Mm-hmm. So I just think we need to keep finding different ways to help our readers understand where we are, not only relative to other cities, but relative to what outsiders think of us and where we stand historically. So that's a long-winded answer of saying that those are the bits of context that are not in this piece by design. Mm-hmm.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Nigel Jaquess, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye!